Hello, and welcome to Poetry in the Air, a Right Attitude radio show. This program is brought to you by the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative that enhances student learning by fostering positive attitudes towards writing. I'm your host, Sierra Walton. Today's show will focus on the work of two poets who visited Savannah State University in spring 2015. During the first half of the program, we will play part of an interview with Iranian poet Sholeh Wope, followed by recordings of poems she read during her visit to campus. The second portion of the show will feature an interview with Mariah Dessa Ikira Tali, in addition to a number of poems recorded from her own on-campus reading. Both of these poets, in their own ways, give voice to the voiceless, the absent, and those who display liveliness and strength in the face of violence and exile.
The outsider. I know what it's like to be an outsider, a khareji. I know how English sounds when every word is only music. I know how it feels not to be an American, an English, a French, call them Amerikayi, Inglisi, Faransavi. See them see me as alien, an immigrant, an Irani. But I've been here so long, they may call me an American with an American husband and American children. But mark this, I do not belong anywhere. I have an accent in every language I speak. How hard is it to write a love song? Last night, a sparrow flew into my house, crashed against the skylight, and died. I want to write a love song. Poppy seed cake on china plate, tea like auburn gold, the New York Times open on the table, black with news, and the man I still love with me. The newspaper says in Conakry, a man is sticking his Kalashnikov into a woman. Now he's pulling the trigger. Hummingbirds zip through the garden. My lover slowly rocks in the hammock, a spy novel on his stomach. I flip a page and a Nigerian soldier shoots a man because he's parked badly and takes the dead man's hat. The bougainvilleas have burst into pinks and reds, the color of cobbled sidewalks after a suicide attack. The child next door squeals with laughter. How hard is it to write a love song? A little in the moment swim, a bit of Bach, perhaps.
You have just listened to The Outsider. And how hard is it to write a love song? Poems written and read by Sholeh Wope. Sholeh Wope, who was born in Iran before growing up in Trinidad in the UK and moving to the United States as an adult, is a poet, artist, and translator. Wope has stated that poetry is like translating the universe into words, and many of her poems reflect the journey she has taken throughout her life, often grappling with themes relating to gender, violence in the Middle East, and Persian culture. To learn more about Sholeh Wope and her poetry, we will now listen to a part of an interview she gave in February 2015, conducted by the QEP's own Didi Botticelli.
I'd like to welcome you, Sholeh Wope, to speak with us. Sholeh Wope is a poet, writer, editor, and literary translator. She was born in Iran and spent most of her teen years in Trinidad in the UK before settling in the United States. She's also a recipient of the 2014 Pennheim Award, the 2014 Hedgebrook Residency, 2013 Midwest Book Award, and 2010 Lois Roth Persian Translation Prize. You are the author of three collections of poetry and two books of translations. Is that right? Yes.
Correct.
And is the editor of three anthologies, hosting many poets. I had read that, yes. And well, your first poetry collection, being the Scar Saloon, the second one Rooftops of Tehran, mm-hmm. and the most recent one, Keeping Time with Blue Hyacinths, was published in 2013. This one is particularly my favorite topic mm-hmm. and title. Thank you so much for being here with me.
It's a pleasure.
What messages would you like to bring through this for your readers? What would you like for them to take away from your translations or from your creations? In general, really.
From my work and my translations?
Yes. I know that your translations themselves are from somebody else, of course, but from your own work.
Yes.
What would you like your readers to take away, to read and walk away having thought or felt?
It's very important to me that through my work I don't tell people what to think, nor I don't intend to lecture them. I don't do that in my work. I always invite a reader to come and take the journey with me, to come and stand in my shoes, see through my eyes, look. I give them images to look at. Mm. And then whatever they take is their own. Mm. It's something we become a we, and then the reader moves away as an individual. But a richer person because he or she has experienced looking at the world through another pair of eyes. Mm. And that's basically how I would like the reader to read my work.
You must get your inspiration from everything around you. Could you give me an example or many examples of when you wake up in the morning mm-hmm. to when you go to bed at night, where yeah. do you gain this inspiration for your yeah. poetry?
I really don't know. Sometimes I think some writers connect to something outside of themselves, and it is difficult to express what it is. You wake up and there is something in your head and you don't know where it came from. And I call those things a gift. You know, you write a poem and it hardly needs to be edited, and it's just a gift that comes. And other times, the way I write, really, I'm a journal writer. Okay. I have a journal with me all the time, and I'm always making notes. Even on my way here to Savannah today, I was making notes about some of the things I saw on the road and some of the conversation that I was having with Chad. And later on, I go back to these notes, and they become sources of my inspiration.
So we might see a little bit of something
absolutely.
In the next pieces. Yes, coming in. That
absolutely.
Would be very exciting. We might pore over these yeah. things. Yes. You translate Persian poems from other authors into mm-hmm. English. If you would, could you speak on the art of translation, especially as it relates to poetry? Mm-hmm. And do you translate your own poetry as well? Or do you write in English? If you would
yes.
help me with
so,
that.
So I write in English language, even though, because I left when I was 13, I kept up my studies studying Persian language and Persian literature. But really, my creativity works in English language. So I write in English. So for me, it's much better to translate from Persian into English, because I believe poetry, translation of poetry is really recreation.
Right.
And when you recreate, preferably the recreator, translator should be a poet who writes in the target language, but is fluent in both languages and cultures at the same time. So I prefer that, even though I have co-translated work. I did Walt Whitman's Song of Myself with yes. Mohsen Ahmadi, who's an Iranian poet, and we translated Song of Myself into Persian, and okay. it's going to come out in April, hopefully, okay. in Iran. So translation is very important to me, because it's a way that I believe we can bring cultures and people closer together,
create that sense of empathy and allow people to sort of have a connection with one another outside of the media and politicians.
Yes, yes, of course.
In their world.
Now, when you begin to write a poem, is there a process that you go through in developing or to arrive at that finished poem or finished product? Is there when you begin that, mm-hmm. what is your process?
Well, I'm very big on editing. I believe that prose is like the meal and poetry is the sauce. So how do you make a sauce? You have to simmer and simmer and simmer. So for me, I could write a 2-page poem that may end up to be just a very, very short poem because I keep cutting. Is this necessary? Yeah. Do I need to burden the reader with this? Because I don't want to be preaching. I don't want to be telling the reader what to think. I just want them to have an experience. Mm. And so I'm very big on editing my work.
Okay. And does it take you a long time? Some may take you a long time.
Sometimes. Some poems are in my notebooks or in my computer for years before they're finished. Yes. And some, as I said, they're a gift. You just write it and you go, I'm done.
Oh, it's it.
I'm
right,
done.
Exactly.
Not I very often.
Right,
but it
right.
Happens.
But those are the best ones, right?
Yes.
Perhaps. Yes.
There is a poem called I Was Sung Into This World, which I am going to read tonight, but it is on YouTube as well. And that was one of those gifts.
Ah, okay.
You know, because it's about when I was born and my aunt, and it must have always been simmering in my head until it just finally came out.
And it just came out.
As
and
one
it was perfect
poem.
As it was.
Right.
How lovely.
Right.
One thing that I just thought of and I really wanted, I heard you speak about just a little while ago, and if you would share with me, you mentioned explaining a process that your friends had shared with you about how to memorize a poem. And I wrote it down here as if you don't know it yourself,
right.
But I was wondering if you would just help me to remember how you had explained it, because I think it would be such a wonderful thing to remember.
Yeah.
Would you?
Well, I was talking to the students earlier on that's what you're referring to. And unfortunately, our students here, they don't memorize poems because they find it difficult to memorize things, and they find it, you know, they shy away from it. And I wanted to show them that actually it can be a fun process. And one of my actor friends in Los Angeles basically showed me how they, actors, learn dialogue. So basically what I took a very, very short, simple poem, and I told them this is how my actor friend taught me to memorize it. So the poem is, in the pause between spring rain, a woman pirouettes in a field. Her skin is a thousand mirrors. So how do we memorize this? You begin word by word and you read it in many different ways. So you go, in the pause between spring rain, a woman pirouettes. In the pause between spring rain, a woman pirouettes in a field. And so on.
Yes.
And what she told me to do, she said the way actors, in order, because they need to act out something, you can put the emphasis on different words.
Yes.
So you can read it as in the pause between spring rain, or in the pause between spring rain, or in the pause between spring rain, or in the pause between spring rain. So she would explore all those meanings. Every which way you read it, the meaning of the line changes.
Yes, it does, definitely.
And so when you do that with poetry, I think, first of all, you get into the marrow of the poem. Also, you begin to own the poem.
Oh, yes.
The poem no longer belongs to the poet, but it belongs to you. You make of it what you want. And that's how poetry should be read.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. That really, really stayed with me. And I know mm-hmm. that will be something that is very, very important.
Good.
And will help a lot.
Yeah. Thank you for this interview. And it's a pleasure to be here in Savannah. And if there is anything more that you need to know, I have written for Best American Poetry blog this week and covering some of these subjects that we've talked about, translation and poetry and being in the world.
It would be most wonderful. Thank you so much. It has been even more of a pleasure for us to have you with the Right Attitude, with the Quality Enhancement Plan with Savannah State University, and just to have you here. It's been so soothing and wonderful to have these questions answered, and such a pleasure to meet you and be in your presence.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be in your beautiful city.
Thank you so much.
Let's have a break, and we will be back with more Poetry in the Air.
I'm Dr. Lisa Yaunt, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
I am Sarah Dillard, a sophomore majoring in civil engineering and technology at Savannah State University. As a peer tutor at the SSU Writing Center, I bring you the Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day. Often, we read back what we think we've written rather than what is actually on the page. Have a friend read your paper out loud to you so that you can hear how your paper might sound to your audience.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects. And to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
Welcome back to Poetry in the Air. We will continue the show by playing for you a number of poems by Shole Wope.
Pickles and donuts. So this is now my journey. I'm going to take you through my journey. Pickles and donuts. Cold basements remind me of the dead fruit my mother smothered in sugar, the phallic pickles souring in tight-lipped jars. I kept my school uniform stained, my long hair pulled back, my walnut breasts cloaked with baggy shawls. Tell my friend next door about the red jam donut beneath our skirts. Teach her the waist-twisting dance of wrapping childhood's curtain around her body so soon unfolded like voodoo air from an uncapped perfume bottle. I breathe in books that turn my eyelashes to blue feathers, my eyelids' veins into delicate wing bones that flap and lift, travel me to an island house on stilted eggs. She eats the stones of pages. She eats the stone pages of an old Quran. Comes of age at dusk where bombs fall on paved roads and the sky rains scalding lava that streams and streams, carries her to the sharp edge of the world. The house on stilted legs. The house on stilt legs. I have just arrived. The breeze lifts up my skirt to have a look. The neighbors file in, bring baked plantains, chickpea roti, goat curry so spicy my eyes melt. They finger my curls, touch my long black eyelashes, laugh. In the street, boys hiss at my back with lips, tongue, and breath. Young men emerge skinny and dark from among tall sugarcane fields, machetes in hand. Just for you, they say, and pull out long, clean, fat stalks bleeding sugar from the cut. The four-leaf clover holes that line the edges below my bedroom ceiling are portholes to the stars. Fireflies come in with the breeze, turn my mosquito net into a green flashing southern sky. I tell them about Tehran's dusty streets and high walls, gardens where every tree steals innocence from eyes, where every rose offers her thorns to stitch mouths, where crows blacken the sky, snitching on the comings and goings of the moon. I sketch in the air the bell jar in which I lived and almost died. Show them the roof of my mouth, where a secret grows like moss, the inside of my belly button, where the cord to my homeland's womb remains uncut. The world grows blackthorn walls, tall, stiff, and spiny. Try to make it to the other side and risk savage thorns. We who left home in our teens, children who crossed boundaries and were torn by its thousand serrated tongues, who have we become? We who bear scars that bloom and bloom beneath healed skins. Where are we going? I ask myself, is home my ghost? Does it wear my underwear folded neatly in the antique chest of drawers I bought 20 years ago? Or nest inside my blouse that hangs from a metal hanger I've been meaning to discard? Is it lost between the lines of books shelved alphabetical in a language I was not born to? Or here on the lip of this chipped cup left behind by a lover long gone? Why do they call us alien, as if we come from another planet? I carry seeds in my mouth, plant turmeric, cardamom, and tiny aromatic cucumbers in this garden, water them with rain I wring from my grandmother's song. They will grow, I know, against these blackthorn walls. They are magic. They can push through anything uncut. I left home at 13. I hadn't lived enough to know how not to love. Home was the Caspian Sea, the busy bazaars, the aroma of kebab and rice, Friday lunches, picnics by mountain streams. I never meant to stay away. But they said, come back and you will die. Exile is a suitcase full of meanings. I fill up 100 notebooks with scribbles. And when I'm done, I throw them into fire and begin to write again, this time tattooing the words on my forehead, this time writing only not to forget. Complacency is communicable like the common cold. I swim upstream to lay my purple eggs. Spirits urge and spirits go, but I write postcards only to the future. What is a transplanted tree but a time being who has adapted to adoption? They say, draw sustenance from this land, but look how my fruits hang in spirals and smell of old notebooks and lace. Perhaps it's only in exiles that spirit arrives. They weep and wail at the door of the temple where I sit, at the edge of an abyss. But even this is an illusion. I was sung into this world. I came into this world on the same bed I later slept in as a child. My aunt, a midwife, large brown eyes, scarred the shape of the sun on one cheek, sat at the gate of my mother's womb, sang me into this world. Bio kuchulu, bio azizam, inja kheli gashange. Bio bio, bio bio, bio kuchulu, بیا عزیزم نور است تو آواز عشق و ما بیا 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 قلبمون شکوفه کرده برای تو طولش نده بیا بیا طولش نده بیا 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 کم کم بیا بیا کم 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 لیتل وان کم دیر وان ایتس بیوتیفول هیر کم 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 لیتل وان کم دیر وان ویت سانگز لایت ا کایند مون کم کم بیا بیا کم کم هارتس هیر هاف بلاسمد تو ریسیو یو دونت تری کم کم بیا بیا کم کم. It was this song I followed into this world. Today, yellowed by age and cancer, my aunt's sapphire wings are spread. I sit by her bed, make her promise to come for me when it is my time, to sing me into the other life with the same song.
You listen to Pickles and Donuts, followed by The House on Stilt Legs, then The World Grows Blackthorn Walls, and finally, I Was Sunk Into This World. These were some of the poems read by Shole Wope to students and a large community at Savannah State University in February 2015. Welcome back. This is Poetry in the Air. I'm your host, Sierra Walton. In this next part of our show, we'll turn our attention to the poetry of Mariah Dessa Ikir Tali. Let's start with Tali reading an excerpt from her novella, Talking with Strangers.
All right, I'm going to start out with this, which is, it's from something that I think is going to be a novella, right? I don't think I have the attention span to write a novel, but a novella, right, like short fiction writing is that's right up my alley, all right? And so this is something that I had put away for a couple of years. And because of the things that have been going on with Trayvon Martin and in particular and Rekia Boyd and a lot of other young people being murdered by the police, I found it necessary to pull this back out. And it's told in the voice of a character named Sangria. The entire time I was pregnant with Coltrane, it felt as though I had no skin. No borders between myself and the world. I felt everything. Everything. Color had scent. Scents had temperatures. When it rained, my body wept, and my hair would be filled with clouds. I heard so many thoughts. So many dagger thoughts and news of war. And more than once, Tashem came home to find me huddled in a corner, cowering in a closet, for the first time in a long time, afraid, conscious of the swirling in my body called emotion. I asked Tashem, I said, what kind of fools are we to be bringing a child into all this chaos? Weren't we once innocent? And look at us now. And more than once, I'd hear someone's dagger thought. And I'd think about the air my son would breathe and how he would choke on it some days. And I wanted him to stop growing. I wanted him gone. How could we protect him from the daily deaths? I walked without skin. I ached for my unborn child. He would walk outside of me. How would I protect him? One night, he appeared in my dream, our son. His eyes wide, brown, wondering. His tiny body the color of a chestnut. He was pointing at something. He was pointing at something that I couldn't see. And when I woke up, I understood that this child wanted to be here. And I cried. I cried for hours in Tashem's arms. I cried full, heavy tears that rocked both of our bodies. I cried bricks from the wall of my body because I understood the agony of mothers. Thank you. It's really interesting reading that poem now, in particular, you know, just considering all the things that are going on. And, you know, knowing these are real concerns, you know, these are real concerns. When I wrote this, I was in graduate school. I did not have children, you know, and so since becoming a mother repeatedly, you know, you start to really start to feel it even more.
Tali is the poetry editor of the literary magazine African Voices, and she is the author of Karma's Footsteps, a collection of poetry, as well as Dear Continuum, Letters to a Poet Crafting Liberation, which was released in spring 2015 by Grand Concourse Press. As a poet and teacher, she reminds us of the healing power of poetry, and her work across multiple genres and mediums continues to spread this message of the transformative power of art while addressing issues ranging from body image and self-acceptance to race, ancestry, and violence. Now let's listen to an interview with Tali, again conducted by Didi Botticelli. In this interview, Tali not only discusses her work, but also offers great advice to young writers.
You are a writer, educator, activist, and a mother. So you possess a wisdom that's advantageous, truly. So I welcome you to this interview.
Thank you.
You began writing at the age of 16.
Right.
Can you tell me what event or events spurred this on, choosing 16? What happened?
Mm-hmm. I was talking about this in a class earlier, reading the autobiography of Malcolm X really was life-altering for me. It was, I've written this down, that life is like PM, pre-Malcolm, dark, right, in the dark, and then AM after Malcolm, right, like I woke up. So reading the autobiography really gave me a different sense of who I was. It gave me a different sense of self, right? Like things that I had been ashamed of, like it's thick hair,
right,
or dark skin, things that I was just like, oh, I should look different. Malcolm, he just threw all that out the window. Reading that book. And so I remember when I read it, I felt like words are extraordinarily powerful and they're really healing. And if this book could do this for me, maybe I could write things that would be useful to someone else.
Yes, you know, share it.
In the future. Yes, and share it. And so that was the initial thing that really spurred me. And then studying the poets, like the Black Arts Movement poets who became, you know, the Black Arts Movement poets because of Malcolm X, right? Reading their work and seeing how they were engaged, like in the world around them and how they were involved in community. I was just like, this is what I need to do with myself. This is how I need to
Fantastic.
Live my life.
And what a perfect age to have done that, right?
That's true. No, it's true. That's true. But it's crazy, right? Because you're in your head, you cannot be moved.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
You cannot
absolutely.
Be moved.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. You. One thing that I noticed also is you're a great advocate for women breaking their silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
always.
That's,
yes.
That's big.
In your experience, how far do you think women have gotten to this day? Do you, and in what direction do you think they need to lead their voice? It's a two-pronged question.
Yeah. It's That's a difficult question for me to answer. It's very difficult because there are silences in so many different spaces, right? There are silences in so many. I feel like it's one another ongoing thing, you know, because maybe one woman feels that she can express herself, but there are six others who are sitting down and saying, that's my story too, but they've never shared it. Mm. And that's more reality than is not. Right. So I can't quite say where we are, right? I don't know what my sisters keep stuffed in them.
Yes.
I don't know.
And even sharing stories with them, did you have any kind of feedback, that sort of thing, would be interesting to know, because you having a voice, sometimes you are the voice for other women, and so hopefully that will help them to have a voice, find their voice themselves.
Yeah, sometimes they say that. Sometimes young women, they might come and say, well, now I've started writing and... or thank you for saying that, because that is what happened to me.
Right.
And so.
Right, liberating in a way.
Maybe. It's disturbing also, right? It's mm-hmm. just, it's painful.
Yes, of
course. It's a painful situation. And how far do we have to go? My goodness. I mean, there's so much to think about. I was thinking the other day about beauty.
Yes.
Right, I read this woman, she wrote this amazing piece in this journal called Hysteria, and she said that every day she receives messages talking about how she's ugly. Every single day, right? I need to remember her name, but she said every day someone sends her a message telling her this, right? And what she said is, that's fine. I am not, she ends saying, I'm not here to decorate the world, I'm here to change it.
Wonderful.
She goes through this whole process in this essay. And I have to say, this essay really had me just thinking, like, well, I mean, even before we sat down, I was saying, well, I should put on some lipstick or something, right? Like, is it necessary right. to... So what right. boxes do we get? And then, of course, lipstick is fun. Lipstick sure. is lovely. I'm sure. not saying we
of
shouldn't
course,
put on lipstick.
Of course, of course.
But if we...
But for whom?
Right, yes. And if we feel that we're not presentable...
Yes.
For whatever, and that might sound silly, but so a certain woman who looks a certain way can have a voice,
yes.
but a woman who looks in that way should sit down and shut up because she doesn't
yes.
look appropriate.
Yes, of course.
According
of course.
To who?
Yeah, according to whom? Society. And what is this essay that you were speaking of?
It's in a wonderful publication called Hysteria.
Hysteria.
It's a wonderful journal put out by a lot of young women who graduated from school recently. A young woman named Bjork, is my contact in Hysteria, and she just published actually some work that my husband and I did on body acceptance and body image. But this essay I'm telling you about is not in the current issue, it's in the issue right before. And I mean, the essay is just, it's staggering.
So that would be something that maybe our students, especially the female students, would like to perhaps look at. And,
oh, yeah.
And then and you would say it's a good idea for them to read it, yes? To
yes.
get an idea?
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
That's great. Here, I'm just going to take you right out of what we were talking about, move you right back into the literature, the writing part of it. Who are your influences?
Oh my gosh, that's like too long to list. But
do you have any that you can just think of right now?
Of course, Ntozake Shange is a huge influence, right? And most people know her for writing for Colored Girls,
okay.
right? Who considered suicide mm-hmm. when the rainbow was enough. But Ntozake Shange has written novels, and she has Nappy Edges is an amazing collection of her poetry, and Daughter's Geography. Like I pretty much have everything she's written,
okay,
except one of her children's books. So she's just brilliant, right? She can write in different languages, or she did write in different languages. She has some physical problems, so she doesn't do so much of that anymore. But she wrote theater, essays. Multilingual, very interested in the African diaspora, and she's written a cookbook.
Oh.
Can you imagine? And where she writes about the history of foods in Brazil and here in the South, and where you can find these links, and just
fantastic. I mean,
she's a genius.
Yes.
Right?
And tying in all these things into that one thing.
And music and painting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she ties it all in, but she's a big influence because she's about breaking silences, and she caught a lot of flack and criticism for her work early on in particular. Yeah, and Audre Lorde is a huge influence. Yes. Audre Lorde is just another person who your silence will not protect you. Like, Audre Lorde is someone who I hold
very close to.
Very, very close. And James Baldwin. Right. Like, these people, and then Langston Hughes.
Yes, of course. Langston Hughes, fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah, Langston Hughes and Sonia Sanchez and Willy Perdomo. Like, those are some of my... Right, like I, James Baldwin and Tazaki Shange and Audre Lorde are people whose work I go back to. And whenever I teach, I always say, if you didn't, if somebody didn't do James Baldwin and Audre Lorde in my class, they didn't take my class.
I see.
Right, they didn't. Yeah. So that's not, right, that doesn't happen. Right? Even if I teach GED courses, which I've done, we are reading James Baldwin.
Fantastic. But no, it's good. That's good. It's good reading.
It is.
Very good reading.
It is. No,
it's important.
It's absolutely. Like, yeah. Again.
And students need to understand that, because I find that students who want to write find it very hard to find that voice by themselves, or find it hard to go through a writing process, you know, or even how to start the writing process.
Right.
So maybe my next question should be, what is your writing process? How...
Just write. I just tell people, just write. You get a journal and you just write. Because people think, I know people who are, they're very methodical about what they do when they get up and how they do their work. That's not me, right? I have two children. I travel, have sometimes had two jobs at the same time that I've been writing in, right? I mean, so this is my real life, is sometimes a swirl of activity. So I just get my journal and write. I might jot down some pieces of something. It might be a mess. It may never see the light of day. It might be a mess and I go back to it and say, oh, there's something I could work with here. Or it might all just come out, right? Yeah. But the thing is to just get the thing and write. And like we said earlier, don't care about audience. Don't care about who's going to criticize it. You just write.
I think that takes a lot of pressure off of the students when you mentioned that. Because imagining who you're, imagining the judgment, right? I think that students are very afraid of writing and how they feel they're going to be judged. So you say... just don't think about the audience, just write.
Right, and it's very difficult for students because students are being graded on everything.
Yeah.
So that makes complete sense. Students are aware if I just write, what's gonna happen next? I'm gonna get a D, right?
Right.
So they're being conditioned, like I'm almost the anti-condition.
And then, so how do you find at the end of the day, how do you pull it all together once
editing,
you have the
editing? And that's what I think is important for students to understand, is that it's a process. It doesn't have to start out, and for any of us to understand, we're all students,
yeah,
right?
Sure. Yeah.
But it doesn't start out usually perfect, right? I mean, on occasion you might, right after you've been writing for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, maybe 3 or 4 times a year, you get it on the first try.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Right, but for most of us, we've got to work through.
Yes.
Right, and see, students, they got 5 classes, they got X amount of papers, they put this out, then it's going to be graded, then it's no good, then they can't do another draft. There's a certain sort of pressure here that's on results, and it's not on process, and that's one of the problems that I find in classrooms. We are not emphasizing process, so students don't feel free enough to have a process. And then that seeps into their creative writing and maybe into their lives. Because in life, aren't you supposed to be getting it right?
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
You're not supposed to have a process.
No. It's supposed to be done right. Yeah, I hear you.
Right.
I hear you. So, I understand. Yeah.
Yeah, no. We need to put more emphasis on allowing people to have process and be people. Yeah. That's what I think.
It's kind of like not the destination, but the navigation.
Yes. Yes.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I tell my students, all right, when I was teaching, all right, so let's just write whatever, you know? I mean, you have to get them comfortable as well. Like, we write a lot of free writes, none of which are graded, right? You can share, you cannot share. It's up to you, right? And those are just something we do every day.
Yes.
And then we get into our discussion. But then when it's time to write papers, all of a sudden... And I say to them, hey, come on. You know, I'm the same person you've been with all semester. Uh-huh. So understand, it's a process. Right? I don't expect you to hand me some junk, but what I do expect you to do is understand this is a first draft.
Yes.
We're going to work on that, and then we'll go to the next draft.
Takes a lot of pressure off of the student, doesn't it?
And puts a lot more on
you.
Yes,
yes, sure, absolutely, absolutely.
No, because that's right, no, yes, and that's true. That's
sure.
true. But you need to be able to have a process, and that's what, you know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. Do you have any closing advice for anybody about writing or about being able to just extend your voice or just do it? Or?
Wow.
What is your message? I guess maybe just a closing message.
I guess just work with your truths, you know? Try to live in the truths that you discover about yourself and give yourself room to change and grow, because you'll change and grow.
It's beautiful.
I guess that's...
That's beautiful. No, it's beautiful. Absolutely.
Yes, that's what I'd say. And love yourselves because you're beautiful. I don't even see you and I know you're beautiful. Don't let them tell you anything different.
That's wonderful. I thank you so much. You're an amazing inspiration.
Thank you.
You're so full of vibrancy and life. And we'd like to thank you so much for just taking
your
time to be there with us.
Thank you so much.
Let's have our last break and we will be back.
I'm Dr. Lisa Yaunt, the director of the Right Attitude Program at Savannah State University. Here's the writing tip of the day.
I am Deanne Goins, a professional writing tutor at the SSU Writing Center, and I bring you the Right Attitude writing tip of the day. The word those refers to an object far from the speaker. Picture someone pointing. The word these refers to objects close to the speaker. Picture someone holding items up.
The Right Attitude Writing Tip of the Day is brought to you by the SSU Writing Center and the Office of the Quality Enhancement Plan. The Right Attitude is Savannah State University's campus-wide initiative to enhance student learning by improving attitudes about writing. Visit the SSU Writing Center in Payne Hall to get assistance with your writing projects, and to learn more about how you can improve your writing attitudes and skills, visit qep.savannahstate.edu.
Welcome back, and thank you for tuning in to Poetry in the Air. For the final portion of today's show, we will play for you a few poems from a reading given by Mariah Dessa Ikir Tali when she visited Savannah State in March 2015.
Learning to swim. She was the baby of the family. Curious and neon. Magic unraveling her singing braids. There was music coming off of her. Violins, batas, pianos, castañetas. Sounds her mama couldn't relate to. Sounds that reminded mama of sin. Imagine Sienna Sunflower Girl, knee-high, southern-tinged, tangos and rumbas tickling her feet. Imagine the first time the branch of the peach tree ripped her skin because she'd been caught moving to some rhythm not born of the church. It was everything. Her sound, her scent, her earth speak. It brought the hands and brought the belts and brought the switches down. And she tried. She tried when she left their house. She tried to conjure her dance again and hear the whispers under her feet. She pulled watercolors around her waist. She wore amber and amethyst on her wrists and shoulders. She chanted and she wound her way through jazz. But no one could read the smoke signals of her cigarettes. It said death would be sweeter than any of this. And when we met, she was 35, and I was newly born, and she was still drowning. But she gave me studios to dance in, trumpets, screaming magentas, muted blues, congas, modeling clay. She kept judgment in a locked box too high for me to reach. She stepped aside. My mother stepped aside.
She'd evacuated her own dreams and courted death many times. And when I met her, she was still drowning. But somehow, she took me to the water, and somehow, she taught me to swim. I was there once. It was something to do, something to crowd the vacant Alabama afternoon. My friend Angie drove the 10 minutes until we crossed the state line, Mississippi. Had I known then, I would have asked her to stop, had I known. My great-grandfather killed a man, and I love him for it. Had I known, I would have gotten out of that car, caressed that soil, taken it home. I would have asked Mississippi what she saw, how many lynchings, how many rapes, if the vengeance surprised her, if she whisper screamed, run, when my great-grandfather decided enough. I was there once. Mississippi saw my great-grandmother go home beaten and torn, watched my great-grandfather's eyes cloud, saw the waterfall. Enough. He rose from the chair of black terrorized skin, his reserved seat. Sit quiet, boy, I can spit in your wife. Split her open. Send her home. See? Enough. I was there briefly once. Mississippi saw tired clench a fist, blood, a fallen body, and our line left the state to escape. I will go back. And when I ask, I imagine Mississippi will tell me she saw some kind of justice at least once. I'm going to share a couple more poems from this. I always say I start out with the difficult material and then I move, right? So I'm going to share this with you. It's called Session 4. See the invisible women, pecan colored, hunched over conveyor belts, anonymous cinnamon hands passing items over red laser lights. See the invisible women, after hours, behind meat scraps or whirring sewing machines. Who hears their, screams break open the night? I've known women, stolen by jagged sheets of pain, pelvises smashed, skulls shattered. Where are their names, the news, the outrage? Who speaks your name? Who speaks your name if you are brown and poor and woman? If your body is felled like a storm-ripped ginkgo tree? But what if we mattered, she whispered once, while we sat for hours in a clinic, uninvestigated, unsolved, undiscussed, unimportant. She was 24. 24 years of dreaming. What if, etched in her easy smile, generous eyes like onyx almonds, she was 24. She vanished like smoke. Her name was never broadcast. Sometimes the hands that claimed her breath sneak into my dreams. Sometimes my own throat burns with bottomless screams. See the invisible women? Everywhere. Their sweat fuels the engine of the easy life. Their screams break open the night. We do matter, I whispered back. We do. But who hears? So this is forced entry, and I read it pretty much at every reading I do, unless I just don't have the energy for it. And usually even when I don't have the energy for it, I'll read it anyway, because I say I have to read it until we don't have to deal with this problem anymore. Forced entry. He broke into me, stole something. Brazen thief, never charged with forced entry. And no one sees the bruise prints. the scratch marks on my spirit. These don't make police reports. The dignity missing from my step doesn't qualify as physical evidence. I shake when I see him. Only my homegirl seemed to notice. His boys' mantra is lying, bitch. They mutter it with machete sharp eyes. Occasionally, one rouses himself to say it. Lying, bitch. And for the first time, I see these men not as men, but terrorists in training. Camouflaged bombers on the ground floor of truth taking dynamite to its foundation, I see myself as a prisoner of war, an exile, a survivor. I wish this wasn't my story, but it is, a million times over. And just when I think it has gone away, it reappears at my doorstep in another woman's face or on the 10 o'clock news. And although I have loved men since, maybe another sister can't. And so this is our story, and it will be ours until we don't have to claim it anymore. Until women from Brooklyn to Oakland to South Africa can sit back in amazement and say, I can't believe such things ever occurred. Until the word rape can be wiped out from vocabularies, stamped out of our memories. Until then, this will be our story. And wounded eyes will tell it, even when we don't. Okay, and I will end with this blues here. This was the first blues that I wrote, and I wrote it after Hurricane Sandy, right? And this is when I really learned what the blues is, because a hurricane is coming. There's nothing you can do about a hurricane but bear witness, right? There's absolutely nothing you can do. And so some months later, after the hurricane, after the damage had been done, and I realized that there in my wonderful city, there were like people who had money and had means and access to the things they needed. And then there were other people who didn't have means and were still living in shelters and, you know, just in some god-awful motel and hotel rooms and didn't get what they needed because they didn't have resources to begin with, right? And so this poem came to me called Global Warming Blues. The ocean had a laugh when it saw the shore. I said the ocean had a big, big laugh when it saw the shore. It pranced on up the boardwalk and pummeled my front door. There's no talking to the water, full of strength and salt. No, there's no bargaining with water, so full of strength and salt. Well, I'm a mama working two jobs. Global warming ain't my fault. I said, please, water, I recycle. I got a garden full of greens. I said, listen here, I compost. I got a garden full of greens. Water say, big men drill and oil spill. And we both know what that means. Now, my town is just a river. Bodies floating, waters high. My town is just a river, but I'm too damn mad to cry. Seem like for big men's living, little folks have got to die. Seem like for big men's living, little folks have got to die.
This is Poetry in the Air, and you just heard Mariah Desa Ikir Tali read her poem, Global Warming Blues. Before that were her poems, Learning to Swim, I Was There, Session 4, and Forced Entry. This concludes another episode of Poetry in the Air. We hope you have enjoyed the work of poets Sholeh Wopay and Mariah Desa Ikir Tali, and that it has made you think about the healing power of poetry. And also the ways in which art of all kinds allows us to provide witness and translate the world and our experiences into different mediums. I wish to thank those who helped make this show possible
including the authors themselves, the QEP's own Dee Dee Botticelli, Adriana de Oliveira, and Lisa Yant, as well as Ryan Clark for his help in production, and Ike Carter and Grace Curry at WHCJ for their support. Don't forget that you can listen to all the Right Attitude radio shows by visiting the Quality Enhancement Plan website at qep.savannahstate.edu. Have a pleasant day, and tune in next time for more Poetry in the Air. I'm your host, Sierra Walton.